Good evening and welcome back to the Georgia Show. Todd is on assignment this evening, so I will be your host for tonight. And thanks for joining. So we're going to talk about what we'll cover tonight in just a couple minutes. We're waiting for our first guest to come in. And while we're doing that, let me ask for continued help. And you know how you can do it. Sign up for our no-ad subscriptions, please. You can do this on the front page of any of our digital publications. Here in Georgia, where we, of course, have a special affinity for the Georgia Record. And if you look on the right-hand side, you'll find the sign-up box, and you can sign up for $10 per month or $100 per year. And it helps us make sure that we can invest in ways to bring you the best, most complete news that we can. And stay current with everything that's happening. And boy, is there a bunch happening. So thank you for that. This evening, we're gonna be talking with Kylie Jane Kremer. Kylie has come on the scene over the past years and is very active in both the national scope and also here in Georgia. She's very involved with the dynamics going on now, both surrounding the GOP, but more generally about, you know, what's going on in Georgia and where we need to go in the future. And so we'll get a chance to talk about that. We'll talk about some of the challenges that are perhaps standing in the way, both in the legislature and in the GOP and in other places. We're going to talk also about child trafficking. We've covered this in some depth in the past, but we're going to point out some patterns that are emerging and try to help you draw some parallels, some perhaps observations around what's happening both nationally and, very frankly, what's happening here in Georgia. And we will have the chance to look at some amazing, perhaps, emerging technology that was hinted at by Catherine Austin Fitz in her discussion with Tucker in the past couple of weeks. So we'll go through that and give you a little bit of vision. We've done some of our own research to see what may be out there, and I think you'll find it pretty amazing. So with that, let me welcome in our first guest, Kylie Jane Kremer. Hi, Kylie. Hi. How are you?
Hi. Thank you so much for having me, Bill.
Oh, you're very welcome, and we're delighted to have you. This is your first time on the Georgia Show, I believe, and so I thought it was an opportune time. I was with Kylie and other candidates that are running for various GOP posts at an event about a week and a half ago. Unfortunately, we didn't get the chance to do an interview then, so I thought this would be a great time for folks to learn more about you, understand kind of your vision for Georgia and perhaps the GOP and where Georgia should be going in the future when it comes to the political landscape. So let's kind of start there, if we can, with the fun stuff. Tell us about what you've been involved with and kind of your vision as we go forward.
Yes, sir. So I guess I want to start off by saying you kind of introed that I work on a national level in politics, and I have for the last 15 or so years. I started flying out when I was in college and started meeting my mom along the campaign trail. She's one of the founders of the modern day Tea Party movement. And to be honest, I thought she was a little crazy when she told me that this Tea Party stuff, and you were seeing it on the news when I was at college, you know, they were picturing it all over the media as people holding pitchforks and dressed, you know, crazy. And that was totally not what it was. And when I realized and got more informed and involved, I started flying out all over the country and working with her. I went to work for Tea Party Express. Throughout the years, I've worked on different, you know, legislative agendas, different campaigns. I was a producer for Sean Hannity. And then most recently, I was executive director of Women for America First, which I'm sure that you know that we were the group that started Stop the Steal after the election. We worked in a big coalition effort and helped lead that. And so we held the three main events in DC, November 14th, December 12th, and January 6th at the White House Ellipse with President Trump. We were not at the Capitol, not bashing anybody that was at the Capitol, but we were at the White House with President Trump. We also had the March for Trump buses crisscrossing across the country, you know, pushing on the different members that were going to be a part of the joint session that we wanted to put pressure on for them not to certify the election. Obviously, fast forward to where we are today. Thank goodness, you know, we are passed all the legalization or the weaponization of the legal system, basically, that myself and my mom were a target of with Women for America First. And I have really put a heavy focus on Georgia, especially after the 2020 election. You know, Bill, I focus mostly on a national level because Georgia is my home state. I've lived here almost my entire life. And I thought we're Republican led. Republicans are going to do the right thing. I don't really need to worry about that. I can go spend my time and efforts in other states to help them where they're not as fortunate to have Republican, you know, leaders. Well, unfortunately, we saw with 2020 that that was not true. We are a Republican state, but we are doing a lot of things wrong here in the state of Georgia, mainly with election integrity, but with a lot of other issues. So I have, last year was the first year that I was a delegate, and I put a heavy focus, you know, on Georgia, but I still do work at the national level as well.
Yeah, you may have heard me say it in the past. Maybe this will be the first time you hear it. But early on, probably late 2020, early 21, I had the opportunity to talk to a couple of folks at the national scale, and I said, "What is it about Georgia? We just didn't feel quite right." And at that time, they even reflected that there is something about Georgia that seems to be. And I've used the word epicenter in the past, an epicenter for some of the problems that we still see today. And it's, you know, you can't really put your finger on why, but, you know, you see legislature making choices, putting in place bills that don't seem to reflect the will and the wishes and perhaps sometimes even the best interests of Georgians. And,
absolutely.
You know, and there's some... Sometimes, often, very frankly, we have to be pushing back on that. And that was the guidance that I've gotten. And for 4 years, it continues kind of to play out, doesn't it? So
it does. And actually, what I'm working on, one of the things that I'm working on today at the national level that has trickle down effects to here in Georgia. And that's what, you know, I am running for assistant secretary of the Georgia GOP. And people keep attacking me and saying, I haven't been involved. Well, you know what? The work that I've been doing has had effects with what's been going on here in Georgia. And a perfect example of that is something that I'm working on right now with trying to help push through the confirmation of Ed Martin to be U.S. District Attorney of D.C. And that is such a fundamental thing, Bill, and I'm sure that you have talked about this, but there was a letter that was sent by 22 attorney generals across the nation to the Senate Judiciary Leader, Grassley. And of those 22, guess who was not included?
Let me guess. Was it our own Chris Carr?
It was our own Chris Carr. And that is so fundamental because it links back into what I'm trying to do with running for a position on the executive committee of the Georgia Republican Party. We need to build back and just revamp, grow, build stronger the Republican Party here in Georgia so that we're able to make sure that we not only elect actual Republicans with conservative values, but that we also hold them accountable. You know, it should be an honor and a privilege that they have an R next to their name. And unfortunately, the party exists right now to give them cover. And, you know, the people across the state of Georgia are not happy with that. We have people that are representing us that, exactly what you said, are doing things that are not in our best interest. And also just not even listening to us. They won't allow us to have a conversation with them. And, you know, Chris Carr has been a perfect example of that. He's responsible for the illegal immigrants that have been allowed to come here from NGOs. Lake and Riley could still be alive today had he acted upon that. And then you get down to the election integrity. I mean, there's so many things. Fannie Willis, you know, going after Trump and the others that were indicted. Chris Carr and Governor Kemp had the authority to stop that at any point, and they did not. So it's so important that we get Ed Martin there, you know, confirmed so that we can make sure that we start holding these people accountable and that there is actually going to be investigations that are being done. You know, people can say whatever they want about Pam Bondi, whether she's doing her job or not. But the reality is that Ed Martin will have the jurisdiction and will not have all the baggage of running the entire DOJ that Ed Martin will not have. So I'm really looking forward to that. And we need to put pressure on Tom Tillis. He's the only Republican senator that is holding it up of coming out of judiciary right now. So, I mean, these things that I'm doing on the national level have direct impacts of what is going on here in Georgia, because we need to stop this weaponization of government.
That's right. It's interesting too. Not everybody knows that if this confirmation doesn't take place or doesn't take place in time, the decision about who to assign might fall to one of the judges that's been working against Trump. So it would not only would he lose the pick that he has put forth, he might get a pick that is unpredictable at best from one of the judges that's been trying to stand in the way of many of these measures that would move America, very frankly, back toward where we're supposed to be.
And this is the thing, Bill. 77 million Americans elected President Donald J. Trump. It was a large coalition of people that came together, you know, Hispanics, all different minority groups, different religions, women. I mean, everybody that came together, it was not one single group. It was Donald Trump that coalesced everybody to get us to vote for him, to believe in his agenda and putting America first. So these Republicans that we have elected need to honor that and need to support President Trump. And that is why the 2026 Senate seat here in Georgia is again the epicenter of all politics. And it's likely to break records for all the money that will be spent ever in a Senate election. And so we need to make sure that we get the Georgia Republican Party in a better place so that we are actually able to be a vessel to help assist with that. You know, we are not going to have Trump force come back in like they did in 2024. And thank God that they did. And thank God for groups like Turning Point and GRA and Greater Georgia, Tea Party Patriots. I mean, I could list a number of them. And then the local GOPs and the local GOP chairs. And then, of course, obviously all the grassroots across the state. But it was not the Georgia Republican Party that did anything. They were not helping candidates. They did not have a infrastructure that was built out to help anything. You know, there's this narrative out there that the Georgia Republican Party is responsible for Trump force because they paid for them. Well, the reality of it, Bill, is that when Trump and Laura Trump and Whatley took over the RNC, what they did was they merged the campaign and they sent the money from the RNC to the states, and the states were basically just funneling it through. So people don't understand that they had the people from Trump force coming into the state telling the Georgia GOP, this is what we're doing. There was no mechanism or infrastructure here that they could even build upon and grow with. They had to completely start it from scratch. And I don't want that to happen for the future. We don't need to depend on outside groups and outside entities coming into the state when we have a Republican Party that is just a shell of an organization. So we need to build that up to be bigger, better, and stronger. And that starts, you know, with doing things like a couple years ago, I would have never told you that I'm running for the executive committee of the Georgia Republican Party, but here I am because it's so fundamental and it all trickles down, and we need to make sure that we are doing all that we can to set us up in a good position for 2026.
We're going to get into some of the symptoms, if you will, some of the evidence that seems to call into question, you know, what the GOP has been doing. But I wanted to talk about a particular theme, because if you look at Trump's own history, one of the things that set him apart is he's not willing to stand by what has been done. He's not going to stick with the status quo. He's going to do things that he knows will work, and he essentially insists on them and works up a team that can accomplish that. Usually is not going to be the way things have been done in the past, and we're seeing that now. One of the dialogues that's going on right now is, oh, gosh, yeah, but you have to unify. Got to bring everybody together, because otherwise this is just not going to work. And yet that seems to fly directly in the face of Trump's own strategies. If there's ever been a guy that says to the country, I'm going to do things differently, I'm going to make sure we do them right, it's President Trump. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely. And, you know, this joke of unify, unify, unify. I mean, look, in the perfect world, that would be great. But the reality is the people that are telling us to unify, whether it's from a national level or here on the local level, I'll talk specifically here on the local level with the Georgia Republican Party. They tell you to unify, but then they ostracize you. They don't talk to you. They attack you if you're not saying and carrying the weight or the water that they want you, you know, to be on messaging. And frankly, I mean, I'm sick of it. I know that people across America are sick of it. What is one of the reasons that we love Donald Trump? It's because he says what's on his mind, what he's thinking, and he actually follows through on his word, right? Promises made, promises kept. And we don't see that here in the state of Georgia. And that's very unfortunate. I obviously would love to have all of us unified. And I think that we can get to that point within the Georgia Republican Party, but Bill, that takes real leadership. And we do not have leadership right now. It's severely lacking.
There's some characteristics too that I actually sort of named the show for what I'm hearing from folks. And that is, you know, they're saying things like, we have to get trust back in this organization. We have to be able to count on real transparency, not just somebody saying, oh, I'm being transparent, but real transparency and real work, again, in the best interests of, you know, the members of the GOP, the best interest of the folks that think they're members, and there may be some question there. There's all kinds of issues that have gone on now for, you know, years and have really crystallized over the time since 2023 to now, and you really can't ignore them. That there seems to be a growing group of folks that that are conservative. They want to call themselves members of the GOP, yet they need that trust back. They need to know that what they wish the organization to do is what it in fact will do, and not just play games with it and I'll call it pretend to try to get certain things done, but really not somehow accomplish them. And you know, you and a number of folks, including me to some extent, as you say, have been attacked over some of these things because apparently they would prefer that we stand by the status quo, stand by, oh, everything's okay. We don't need to question these things. But if we're ever at a point where you got a question, I think now's the time, you know?
Well, and here's the thing, they can talk about transparency, but words only go so far, right? Actions speak louder than words. And one of the things that is just paramount to me right now, but I think it's pretty indicative of what we've seen overall, is the NDA, which is really not a non-disclosure agreement. It's a non-disparagement agreement that the Georgia Republican Party, really Josh McCoon and the hired legal counsel of Josh McCoon, Alex Kaufman, have decided that the candidates running need to sign. And Bill, why do we need to sign a non-disparagement agreement to be able to talk about what is going on and the things that we want to change within the Republican Party? There should be no issue whatsoever with bringing truth to light and to be able to have these frank and honest and open conversations. That's one of the things that I've been saying and kind of screaming about. You know, I have kind of a platform on X, and you know, everyone who is in the Josh McCoon camp gets very angry with me. And they're like, oh, all you do is monetize your account so that you can, you use the Georgia Republican Party and Chairman McCoon just to bash him to monetize your account. Well, Bill, I've got news for you that my analytics actually go down when I talk about Georgia, but it's so fundamentally important to me. I'm not on X to monetize. I have a real job that I have to depend on to make, you know, a living and to survive. Of course, it's nice and to have a little bonus, but anybody who wants to pretend like they wouldn't monetize if they had the opportunity is just flat out not telling the truth. But what I'm doing is using that vessel, and they cannot shut it down. And that's why they don't like it. And I think it's completely crazy, to be honest with you, that, I mean, Josh McCoon and the Georgia Republican Party not only argue with patriots across the state of Georgia, but some of the most active and engaged people that are putting events together, showing up at the Capitol and whatnot, they're arguing with them on X, but then they're also blocking them. Mm-hmm. And I just find that just honestly, it's disheartening. It's sick. It's what is wrong with having these frank and open, honest conversations? If you have a great point of view, or if you're doing things so ethically and, you know, morally right, and you stand by them, then you should have no problem defending that in a conversation. That's right. So I think that that's kind of like what we're seeing all over, that it's just continuous of not being transparent, saying one thing, doing another, all these secret conversations being happened by closed doors. And guess what? It's a club and we're not in it.
It's interesting you bring up the, you know, the other people that are working here in Georgia. I'm lucky enough to know many of them around the state. And Georgians for Truth, as an example, has held, maybe a couple dozen press conferences down at the Capitol, trying to raise awareness of the issues with the voting machines, the voting processes, Some cases, the people involved, some cases, the lack of support for the state election board. But I don't recall the GOP leadership showing up to, I can't remember any of those. They have their own election integrity initiative. But there again, it seems to have culminated in a bill that very frankly didn't get passed. Why not? You would think that calls could be made and the GOP could put its weight behind getting at least one bill done and 397 get left on the table.
Well, Bill, I mean, here's the thing. Absolutely, the Georgia GOP has not helped Georgians for Truth or any of the other groups that have been showing up. And guess what? Those people have still been showing up relentlessly. And I'm so grateful for them because without them, we would not even be having this conversation, to be completely honest. What the Georgia Republican Party did with this past legislative session is they, you know, introduce this legislative agenda 3 weeks into session, and it was nothing more than smoke and mirrors. Governor Kemp was very clear with multiple state legislators that they were not going to get anything passed, and anything that was brought to his desk, he was going to veto, and then there would be retribution from it. So we knew going into this that Josh McCown was not going to allow anything with teeth to get up there, number one. And then there was going to be no public pressure or support mechanism whatsoever that the Georgia GOP was going to be engaged on to put pressure on, you know, these different members. And what ended up happening is, you know, you have that bill 397 that was weak to begin with. Why are we not talking about paper ballots and getting rid of the dang machines? Mm-hmm. And one day voting. I mean, President Trump issued an executive order of what he wanted. We have been working on this all across the nation for 4 to 5 years now. Why are we still talking about, you know, state election board rules and these many little things that they want to give us, like dangling little carrots, like, oh, you guys don't quite possibly understand. We're just going to do this and we're going to get to that point eventually. No, we want it now. And they work for us. And the Georgia Republican Party should be standing with us if they want to take claim for standing with President Trump and pulling him over the finish line. But the reality is, they didn't pull him over the finish line. They don't, the leadership currently, majority of them do not actually stand with President Trump. They are more concerned with having a title next to their name and their next political, you know, thing that they're going to try and achieve, whether it's a party position or they're going to run for a position under the Gold Dome themselves. And I think we're all very tired of it. Other states across the country have been meeting way more than the Georgia Republican Party. We haven't had a state executive committee meeting since last August of 2024. We haven't had a state committee meeting now in a year. It was May of 2024. Other states started immediately meeting right after the election. So there are states that I've met 4 and 5 times. And you know why they were meeting, Bill? They were meeting because they were having committees doing different work and different things about whatever their legislative session was coming up in their respective states so that they could push back and actually do things or advance things. And one of the things that we've talked about here in Georgia so much recently is this pesticides bill that mm-hmm. got shoved down our throats. Well, guess what? If you look at Tennessee, they mobilized the grassroots, the Republican Party there, and they were able to stop it. We were told here by Sally Grubbs, Brad Carver, Josh McCown, Alex Kaufman, you need guys, everyone needs to sit down and be quiet and don't put any public pressure about anything so that we can get this weak election integrity bill passed. Well, guess what? It didn't get passed and everyone sat quietly and we just got patted on the heads like good little school children.
The reality about SB 144, the bill you're discussing, is that it was active in about 7 states. And to my knowledge, all the others, I think there were 6 others besides Georgia, all turned it down. And they realized that, you know, it puts farmers, it puts consumers at risk and may impact their ability to even go after a chemical company should they be harmed by something to do with the chemicals. So it shields chemical companies. They appeared to know that.
Protecting big business, one of Governor Kemp's favorite things.
Well, and they're foreign too. So the biggest mm-hmm. companies that are protected are ChemChina and Bayer. Bayer is a German company. And isn't it ironic that they don't allow some of those same chemicals to even be used in Germany, but they'll use them here. So to your point, that was one of the things I was referring to earlier when I said sometimes things seem to get done that are not in the best interest, don't appear to be in the best interest of Georgians. And that debate on 144 continues even today. I talked with one of the senators in the last 2 weeks about it. I need to take a break. I want you to stay right there, and we're going to get into some of the specifics of the concerns here in Georgia, okay?
Okay, great.
Be right back.
Well, in the case of hydroxychloroquine and ivermectin, these are two medications that have been FDA approved for use in humans for decades. Mm-hmm. They are very, very inexpensive. Interestingly, available over the counter in almost every other country other than the US and Canada. Yeah. You can just walk into a pharmacy and buy them like we buy Tylenol in much of the world because they're that safe. And we've known for decades that ivermectin has very strong antiviral properties. It has anti-inflammatory properties. And both ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine are what we call zinc ionophores. They help to move zinc from the bloodstream into the cell, which is where it needs to be in order to fight off a virus. So lots of application for these. And we have every reason to believe that those drugs also will likely have some efficacy against H5N1 or a number of other respiratory viruses that we may meet down the road.
All right. We're here with Jane Kremer. Hey, Kylie.
Hey.
As the last few weeks, couple of months have progressed, we've seen more discrete examples of things that are concerning from the GOP, not just overlooking things, not just asserting a legislative agenda late, but actually seeming to take steps to either control or manipulate certain aspects of the upcoming elections, or in fact, the ability of folks to communicate. Seems to be directly in the face of what most Republicans say we're here to do, and that is uphold the Constitution, every one of the amendments that's part of it, and make sure that we are doing the right things, the good things for America. I put together a few things around it, but I wanted to start by saying that both yourself and Lisa Pierce were initially denied access to the upcoming ballot for the slots that you are running for in the Georgia GOP executive committee. And seemingly it had to do with some flaw in documentation. But when we've looked at, we took the chance to look at other submissions that have been done previously and concurrently, and it didn't seem to be that different, not to the point you would exclude ballot access. Finally, after enough questioning, they relented. Tell us your read on that after now that you are able to run, as you said, for Assistant Secretary of the GOP.
Well, I hate to say it, but it was a bit predictable. They want to control everything. And this was the latest thing that is going to be Josh McCune's last kind of, struggle for power. And we're seeing a lot of these people kind of acting like caged animals and doing whatever they can under the disguise of legal counsel. Well, let's make something very clear, Bill. Alex Kaufman, who is the Georgia GOP legal counsel, was hired by Josh McCune, or I don't know if he was originally hired by him, but the point is that as chairman, he could hire and fire whoever he wants. Alex Kaufman acts at the direction of only Josh McCune. They don't have executive committee meetings. They don't have state committee meetings. So the only person that is directing Alex Kaufman is Josh McCune. And it's Alex Kaufman that keeps coming forward with all of these hoops that everybody has to jump through. So it's just by proxy. I mean, it's laughable to use these, it's legal counsel. Well, number one, Josh McCune is a lawyer. And number two, it's everybody can see right through exactly what they're doing. And it was egregious that they tried to keep me and Lisa Pierce off the ballot. Like you said, there were other submissions previously and concurrently that were very similar. It just had everything to do with that we are not going to be rubber stamped and they cannot control us. So what did they have to do? They had to stop us. And then when it blew up, and they were, struggling to figure it out. They come up with this committee and, go through all of these hoops and they allow us access. And then these people want to pretend like they had a choice when reality was Lisa Pierce and I were going to be seeking, or we were going to be filing litigation, and they knew it. And that's what they wanted to avoid, because they wanted to avoid that whole press scandal. So we were allowed access. And then look what happens. They won't allow us a delegate list. So yet again, another reason and way that they are trying to stop us. And why? Your perspective is so good. If your policies and your agenda of what you want to do with the Georgia Republican Party, and you've already done such a great job, there should be no reason that you cannot defend those positions. Yeah. But the reality is they can't.
The NDA is a perfect example. I mean, I've been lucky enough to be have a business background and been involved in mergers and acquisitions up to nine figures. And even with those, I'm not sure that I've ever seen a nine-page NDA with as many different things. It's a shame to laugh at it, but it really is laughable, because it's like, why would you need to include all these things?
Well, and my legal counsel, you know, was very clear. I tried to go back and forth with Alex Kaufman about it, just saying that it's too overbroad in certain areas and it's way too restrictive in other areas. We need to have an open dialogue about this, because I want to make it very clear. I am not, and I think I speak for the rest of the candidates, we're not opposed to signing an agreement to protect the data from the Georgia Republican Party. That is a property of the Georgia Republican Party, and we need to protect that. But the reality is, Bill, it hasn't been protected, even under Josh McCoon. They did the same thing last year, and I don't think that people realize that, but they tried to keep the candidates from being able to access the delegate list from last year, and they went around and round about legal stuff. And anyways, long story short, it was again going to end up in litigation, and so they turned it over. And it's really disheartening, because we're wasting time on this when we could actually be talking about how to move the party forward, how to grow and reach out to new people that maybe were first time Trump voters, or, you know, are just disenfranchised with the Democrats and didn't vote this past election. I'm here in Cobb County, and Cobb County is the third largest county in the metro Atlanta area. And we trended blue. 11% of counties nationwide trended blue, while 89% trended red and towards Donald Trump, and Cobb trended blue. Well, let's talk about that. Let's figure out what didn't work, because we know what didn't work, and it was a lack of leadership. It was not doing the things that the Republican Party of Cobb needed to do. And we're not even talking about that. We're just like moving forward and everybody just needs to kumbaya and unify. No. I live here. People live in this, you know, great county. Why are we not talking about it right now? Because it just happened, so we can figure out what didn't work and different ways that we can potentially make changes and improvements, and they won't have those discussions with us.
Yeah. I want to come back to Cobb in just a few minutes, but I wanted to run through some specific data that you and others have put together that, again, kind of crystallizes some of these concerns. Let me go ahead and pull this up. So here's a post that you put out, and it has to do, I don't want to go through all the detail because we've done this in our previous show, but I did want to begin getting a sense of, this is beginning to stack up. You know, one, you can explain away certain things with mistakes or, you know, gosh, we did it the wrong way, we fixed it. But this is beginning to look like more of a, I'll call it a pattern, for lack of a better term. So here's an example of one of these, you know, charges for $479 to a personal training outfit called Alloy Personal. And we did some research to look at that. I believe there's now been five of these that have shown up in the FEC filings. There's the front page from the Alloy location in Sandy Springs, which appears to be the subject of these payments. So again, you can kind of look at one and say, well, it might have been a mistake. But then when you begin to see these crop up, and the fact that somebody had to take time to think this through, you know, they call it a meeting. Why would they call it a meeting? They break it between federal and non-federal funding. And then we also started looking at other things like Brooks Brothers, also a meeting. I'm not sure you have a meeting normally at a retail store. But again, it's broken into federal and non-federal. We're going to show something about that in just a minute. And then we see this Sky Jump, and we reported this on our last show. But you begin to get a sense of what's going on. Why are all these showing up? These aren't meetings, obviously. At least they don't appear to be. Maybe there was a meeting at Brooks Brothers. Just doesn't seem to fit. Then we start noticing that the percentage of federal versus non-federal is the same for each of these. Why would that be? How do you determine, you know, the percentage of federal spending coming from Brooks Brothers at a meeting there. And then most lately, I know that BKP and others, and I think yourself too, have spoken of this $7,500 payment to Travis Bowden. Well, Travis was the executive director of the GOP, left that post sometime in the middle of the year. And then this was done. You can see the date there, the beginning of December. And he's responded to it saying, oh, well, that was a Christmas bonus. The challenge is that when you look at Travis's LinkedIn, I don't think I have that with us tonight. I might have copied that in. No, I don't. He still lists himself as a special advisor to Josh McCoon and the chairman of the GOP. So how is he getting compensated for that if he said that he was no longer on the payroll? Just these things keep cropping up. And then here's one that's kind of interesting. The Painted Nest, I think a $80 or so charge down there, if I recall correctly. But again, it's down in Butts County. What else is in Butts County? Well, Ms. McCoon accepted a position as president and CEO of the Butts County Chamber of Commerce. Is that perhaps coincidence? Or is it, again, part of some bigger, you know, thing we're seeing here? We don't know. We don't know as we sit here. But you have to logically think, if you're looking at this, is this something we need to ask questions about? And it does seem to be. So here's a quick synopsis of, you know, five charges of $479, $2,300 and change if I do the math in my head. Charge of $131 at Brooks Brothers. Charge of $58 at Sky Zone. Individually, are they that big a deal? Yeah, maybe not. But when you start adding it up, you're kind of like, what the heck are we paying for and why? And why is it, you know, not just, oh, yeah, well, we use this for this and that and the other. And then a payment of $7,500 to Mr. Bowden. And then culminating in this $120,000 charge for a watch party with security provided to the tune of over $12,000 by Hawk. And Hawk is owned or run by apparently a long-term friend of Ms. McCoon. So where are we going with all this? Well, we don't know. We're not going to draw conclusions as we sit here. Well, does it deserve questions? Yeah, I think it does, right?
So I just want to, excuse me for correcting you, but I don't think the correct word is culminating in the election night party, because we are uncovering many things that have not been brought out yet. I know I have many that I am, actually, I don't think that I probably will be the one releasing them. I think that this has gotten way bigger than any one person or one individual or, you know, small group here in Georgia can handle. And I think that this is definitely something that we need extra help with, and we need authorities actually to help with us. Because here's the thing, it's not a pattern, it is a choice. These continued charges show us the complete disrespect and lack of, I mean, he's completely breaking fiduciary responsibility by not being accountable for what Georgia GOP dollars are being spent on. And it's not just this. I mean, there's $1,700 on dinners at a steakhouse. There are first class tickets, hotel rooms. I mean, there is so much that is going to be coming out. It's very alarming. And I think that this is what the reality is that we're in a situation where the Georgia Republican Party is not raising money like it should. And that is for a multitude of reasons. But one of the main reasons is that there is zero transparency. And so donors from all across the state, but also across the country, because again, going back to our earlier part of the conversation where we were talking about this being the epicenter of politics, there will be a lot of money flowing into the state from outside, and they're not going to be giving it to the Georgia Republican Party. They're going to be giving it directly to the candidates. But we need money as the Georgia Republican Party so that we can be an outside vessel that is helping the candidate that is, you know, becomes the Republican nominee. And that's a major problem, that we have zero transparency here. And it's because of the lack of trust that the Georgia Republican Party has with the donors. And so that's something that drastically needs to change. But it also needs to change by actually, people are not donating because, in addition to the transparency, they are not seeing anything. There is nothing tangible that they can grasp onto or be told that, hey, this is what the Georgia GOP is actually spending money on. I mean, if you go and you look at these FEC reports, which are very overwhelming, to be completely honest with you. I mean, it reads like a personal bank account. I mean, like mine, Amazon, Instacart, DoorDash, Brooks Brothers, you know, I mean, going out to dinner with my friends and family. This is not a personal checking account. This is a political party. And if you go and look at other states, specifically swing states, and you look at their expenditures, I mean, it is baffling. They have charges that are legitimate. I mean, can you find one or two that maybe they shouldn't have charged? Maybe. But by and large, it is a stark contrast to what we see here in the Georgia Republican Party. And something else that I don't know if you've talked about, Bill, but I think is very important that people understand is that when you go to FEC.gov, that is the mechanism that you can search FEC records where they are posted for anybody to view. Well, I was always going to that site and using the search query to type in whatever I was looking for. You find the entity and then you can, you know, break it down, use different filters. Well, I was just notified within the last month or so that when you file FEC amendments to, you know, reports that were filed, those actually do not go into the system and do not show up on the query. And that is why we are finding all of this, because what is being done is these FEC reports are being filed by the deadline. And then at a later date, they're going back and they are amending the reports and putting all of this nefarious stuff in it. So unless you're going and you're pulling each report, we're all missing it. And that's why everyone's been missing it this whole time.
Well, isn't that interesting? I'm going to share something I wasn't prepared really to talk about on this broadcast, but it relates to something I was going to bring up next. And that is this: what about the Rosetta Stone relationship? And when we began investigating the relationship between first the Fulton County GOP, which is an entity, you know, Josh McCoon was working along with the Fulton County GOP back in those days. This goes back to 2020, I believe. And then subsequently, we found payments to Rosetta Stone. But guess how they were made? There were amendments made to their financial filings from both Fulton County and then from the GOP under David Schaefer. And some of those amendments included some changes to what had been paid to this entity. We're going to be reporting more on Rosetta Stone and what's been paid to them by all the entities in the coming days. But I thought, isn't that interesting? You would bring up the notion of amendments.
Well, and if I can give you a little tip, you should go and look at the other candidates in the executive committee race and look and see their contributions or expenditures to Rosetta Stone.
You were right over the target.
Yes. And this is all just alarming. It just keeps circling the same group of people and the same players are involved that are doing all of these things. And something is not right here, Bill. I think that, you know, a lot of us have had this gut feeling for a while, but you couldn't figure out exactly what it was. Mm-hmm. And I think that we found it. So, you know, like I said, we're going to watch this all play out. And the most important thing to me is that while people want to talk about that, I am this flamethrower and all I want to do is monetize my ex and bash the chairman, that's not my goal at all. None of this is personal. Look, I am working in politics, whether it's a local level or the state level, I mean, the national level, because I want to have our country run efficiently to give me and my family the freedoms and liberties to go and do whatever we want. And whatever I do in my own time, let me tell you, it's not going to be on the Republican Party cocktail circuit. There are a lot of other things that I like to do in my free time, but this is so fundamentally important so that we can get the correct people in here and under the Gold Dome. And then also in Washington, D.C. representing us, because guess what? We elected Donald Trump and that was a huge win, but we have so much work to do. And if we don't keep, you know, the majority, we have a slim majority right now. The first thing that they're going to do is they're going to start the impeachment proceedings again. And then here we go. It's going to be a repeat of Trump's first, first presidency. And we've got to stop that.
And even now we see some of the Republicans working against him. Remarkably, you know, you would think, oh, gosh, this is their chance to be heroes. No, you know, Mr. Tillis and, McConnell and others are working against him, believe it or not. So,
well, and I would like to point out about that. I mean, Governor Kemp, I have been saying for a while, and everybody's been, you know, not listening to me or telling me I'm crazy, that he was not running for the Senate seat. And he's not running for the Senate seat, we just heard this week. And the reason is, because he is running for president in 2028. And this is the reality of it, is that he thinks that there is a pathway now for him to be JD Vance, because he will likely be the Republican, you know, front runner leading in the 2028 primaries. And he wants to be the Nikki Haley or Ron DeSantis that, you know, goes against JD. And first of all, that's not going to happen. We're not going to let it, you know, get to that point. We're going to pull JD over the finish line. But the reality is that Josh McCown specifically is more worried about his boss working as a state employee for Georgia, his boss, Governor Kemp, worrying about his political future and Josh McCown's political future, so that Josh McCown has a political future. If he hitches his wagon to Donald Trump, Donald Trump's going to be gone out of there, you know, in 3.5 years. And then what? And then Josh McCown's going to be back to practicing, you know, law. And I don't think that that worked out very well for him. So this, people have to look at this as it is a chess game that these people are playing. It is not instant gratification. There are deals being made that are long games behind closed doors, and people need to start waking up to what is happening, because these balls are in motion and it is really hard to stop them once they've gotten so, you know, built so much momentum behind them. And so it starts right now with getting the Republican Party just back to being actually having the committees meeting, and the executive committee, the state committee, and then having subcommittees, so that we can develop an infrastructure here in the state of Georgia so that we can actually do things, and then also build out these down ballot races and actually get Republicans elected in these down ballot races. Because while Trump won, we had significant losses, including 2 seats under the Gold Dome. And I don't know how anybody thinks that that's a Super Bowl win that we keep talking about.
Nope, that's a miss by all standards. We appreciate you being with us. I know we're going to get a chance to chat again as we get closer to the state convention coming up the end of the first week of June. Thanks so much for being with us. Any last messages for the listeners?
Thank you so much for having me, Bill. And I would just like to tell anybody, if you'd like to get in contact with me, please reach out to me. The best way is probably on Twitter or X. You can DM me. My DMs are open, or get my contact information from a number of people around the state. I'd love to come and speak at different groups. We're not being invited. A lot of the candidates are not being invited. And I just want the opportunity to meet you and to present the different ideas of how we can grow and build up the Republican Party of Georgia. And I look forward to the convention in June and hope that, you know, we get there all in one piece, because I know that it is getting a little nasty out there, but we all have to remain the end goal, keep the end goal in mind, which is to build up the Georgia Republican Party to be bigger and better than it ever has been.
Yep. Not the first time, but I have reflected a number of times over the past couple of years, Georgians are getting a lot smarter. They can sense truth when they hear it, I believe. And many more are waking up to that. So hopefully that will play out in the coming days. And we'll look forward to our next discussion as we get closer to June. Thanks so much, Bill.
Have a great night.
You're great. All right, let's take a break. We're going to hear from Alp. Tucker Carlson introduced Alp as a nicotine pouch. And as a matter of fact, we do use them here at the Georgia Record occasionally and in proper form. Here's a message from Tucker.
So we are in the factory in Kentucky. This is Alp World HQ, and we are at the end of the packing line. So I'm going to show you how it works. We have the card, throw it in there. There's a packing slip, and then you have the Alp. And four, but that seems honestly like a lot. Three now, but it's good. You just pack a punch that, you know, for a normal 18 brand, it'd be like 8. You know, we think 3 is fine. Next one. Again, 4. Let's throw 3 in just to keep it fair. Okay? There you go. So you can see you can get fast at this. And really, it's just a matter of repetition. This is kind of the assembly line that, you know, Henry Ford devised so long ago.
Tucker, stealing all the Alp.
I love the Tucker ads, as many of you know. So one of the topics that's darker, but that I believe we need to make sure we don't overlook, is this notion of child trafficking. And it is, I believe we're going to find out that it is darker and more troubling than we really understand as yet. And I wanted to play a comment that Trump made, and then I want to bring it home for folks here in Georgia, because I think that's what we're supposed to do. So let me play Trump's comment first. This was during the last few months of his campaign in 24.
Presidency's facilitated the largest wave of sex trafficking and human trafficking in history, the history of our country by far. And in case you don't want to write about it, which you should, because there can be no bigger scandal than this, we have, under this administration, 325,000 migrant children are missing. 325,000. In other words, take your biggest stadium in California and you could fill it up five or six times. Those are all missing children. Many of them are dead. Many of them are sex slaves and slaves of different nature.
So, you know, you hear something like that, and we heard it again this past week from RFK talking about how they had stopped HHS from being one of the primary vectors of human and child trafficking. Primary vector means one of the mechanisms that has been facilitating it. It's easy to think that these occur somewhere else, but I wanted to make sure that we are cognizant here in Georgia that this is not someone else's problem. This is happening here. And literally, just in the last couple of weeks, a large-scale bust was made that we need to acknowledge was right here in Georgia.
Yeah, I held a press conference earlier this morning in Columbus. Now, this was in reference to Operation Lights Out.
During the operation, more than 15 people were arrested on human sex trafficking charges involving children. This morning, the GBI sending a message to parents across Georgia to know about online predators. Take a listen.
I do want to plead with the parents to closely monitor your children to ensure that they are not communicating with these individuals who are preying on them. These predators will travel from near and far to victimize your children. We all take these crimes very seriously, very serious. And if you would, focus on your children.
There's some very powerful words there. Again, focusing on your children is what he's saying. For more regarding this operation and the list of who were arrested, you can head over to our website, WALB.com. Carlo?
Well, Amanda.
Okay, so you can go to them to find out the list of people that were arrested. But I wanted to make sure we knew of one specific one. One of the people is a gentleman by the name of Carl Sprayberry. And you'll find that listed in the, you know, in the other reports on Operation Lights Out. And believe it or not, this gentleman just got through losing an election in November. Democratic candidate in, I believe, District 139. Carl Sprayberry, one of those arrested in this latest child trafficking sting. Why do I bring this up? Because we need here in Georgia to be aware that this is a problem that exists here. We saw human trafficking going on through Hartsfield Airport when Senator Colton Moore found them working through a room actually in the airport, bringing people in from outside the country. But as it relates to parents watching after their children, we need to be cognizant that that work, that care needs to be taken right here in Georgia. So we wanted to make sure we brought this out so that people could take appropriate action and be aware. Okay. We're going to be reporting more on that and some of the history behind this child trafficking on Insist on Truth in the coming days and weeks. So that you'll find also aired here on Rumble and so forth. Take time to catch up on that when you can, and we'll try to bring you as many facts surrounding it as we possibly can. All right, let's play one more break, and we'll come right back, and then we'll give you a short tickler to something else that's actually pretty exciting.
This is a special report.
Knowing how to invest your money is harder than ever before. Dealing with stock market volatility, record debt, and terrorist attacks requires new thinking, At U.S. Asset Management, we can help you see the world more clearly so that you can move beyond the chaos and invest with confidence. Call us, visit us online, or drop by our office. U.S. Asset Management, helping you make better decisions with your money.
Okay. You'll recall that in the last show, we played a portion of Tucker Carlson's interview with Catherine Austin Fitz, and she talked about, astoundingly, underground, deep underground military bases and a transportation system that had been financed to provide transportation between these, and it's all underground. Sounds fantastical, I know, but she has years of research looking at how this was paid for, how it was orchestrated, and you can get information on that. In a following portion of the conversation, she gets into talking about energy and how they might power some of these dumbs, as many people have learned to refer to them. We're going to play that portion, and then we're going to go to a website that relates to one of the companies, one of those concerns that she's going to talk about. Again, we recommend that if you haven't listened to this interview, you can find it on X. And again, it's Tucker Carlson speaking with Catherine Austin Fitz, F-I-T-T-S. Let's play this next little portion.
But you believe that there's a whole constellation of underground bases built by the U.S. government in the United States. Like, that fact alone, just the physical infrastructure of it, because normally you talk about what are
it's
they doing?
It's enormously expensive.
Well, it's unbelievable. And like, right. It raises lots of practical questions. How do you ventilate them? What about food and water supply? You know,
where's the energy? Are we using breakthrough energy or?
Where's the energy come?
Right. Right. Because I'm sure that we have the ability to produce breakthrough energy at very low cost. You know, if you go back.
Why
and
are
start
you sure
with,
of that?
My Dutch partners, I met because they were doing a series of conferences on breakthrough energy. And they brought together breakthrough energy inventors from around the world. And, you know, you can see all the videos up on the internet and really went through the history from Tesla on of different inventors who have discovered and claimed different innovations with breakthrough energy. And I'm convinced that this energy exists. And I'm also convinced if you look at a lot of the really fast ships, you know, flying around the planet, you know, that they... You know, they're not using classical electricity.
They're not using.
Right. So, you know.
They're not running on diesel.
Right. Exactly. Right. So.
Yeah. So we know that these, I'm sorry, I get so caught up in the details, but we know that there are quite a number of large underground bases in the United States. We can
right.
state that as fact.
Right.
And then the question becomes, of course, like if they're connected to the power grid, you know, if they're pulling off just a conventional natural gas electricity generation station, you could like know that and measure it. But you think they have independent energy sources. Of course they do.
So one of the questions I have that I think is really important is when you look at breakthrough energy, if you are running the planet. So I have this nickname for the committee at the top, Mr. Global. If you were Mr. Global, you would not want to implement breakthrough energy on a widespread basis for a variety of reasons, one of which is everybody got a hold of it and weaponized it. It could be very dangerous.
Why?
My understanding is that literally one small group of people could take this, you know, with no sovereign powers or, you know, just organized crime and use it in a way that could weaponize it and make it very dangerous. I'm not a scientist. I don't really understand.
Right, but energy by definition is dangerous. You know, gasoline's dangerous.
Right.
Right, electricity's dangerous. Of course, nuclear energy's dangerous.
Right, but if you're the risk manager and you're in charge of managing the planet, you know, this has more disruption capability, both weaponization, economic. You know, suddenly everybody's free to do whatever they want, and so they're much harder to control. So if you're Mr. Global and you have the capacity to dramatically lower the energy cost, the other danger is then population skyrockets and you're concerned about that. So if you're Mr. Global and you're worried about what will happen if you bring this technology out, it's very convenient to get complete control. If you don't trust the population to be environmentally responsible or politically responsible than complete control.
So I have we have a good mutual friend who's been bothering me for years to interview you. You've got to interview her.
Why?
So glad. Well, just because he said this is like the best informed, smartest, most reasonable, mainstream, sane person I know of you. He said this, and I was like, yeah, okay. Anyway, and we're just really glad we did this interview because you're blowing my mind up and down. How convinced are you that breakthrough energy, alternate forms of energy, non-publicly disclosed forms of energy are in use by the U.S. government?
I think there's a very high chance that they're in some kind of use in a very controlled, secret way.
Yeah. Well, there are tons of indications, and you've had a number of people, like at the contractor level, like I'm a federal contractor electrician or a concrete guy or whatever, and I was working on this underground facility. There are a number of people who come forward to say this, and I saw what appeared to be some brand new form of energy I didn't understand.
Right.
And sane people, too. Sean Ryan, who's a friend of mine, wonderful guy, an honest man, who's a podcaster, did an interview with this guy who was just like a random blue-collar guy.
Right.
I think he was a concrete guy, and he got a call for a million yards of concrete or whatever and went to this underground facility, DOD facility, and saw clearly signs of some energy source that was, defied the laws of known physics. So, and there are a bunch of people have said stuff like that. So I don't think it's crazy.
So I have two businesses. One is the Solari Report. The other is Solari Screens. I do an investment screen. And I think, a lot has to shift in investment if we're going to have a real civilization and not misallocate. I think we're misallocating capital terribly anyway, but he for 30 years has been an investor in a breakthrough energy company.
Someone has been.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's called Brilliant Light. You can go look at their website,
So we heard that and we thought we would do exactly that. And here it is. Brilliant Light. And you'll find it. Just do a Google search and you will bring this up. And on their website, they actually describe with some level of detail how they do this. And as she says, until capital is allocated appropriately, these will be something like startup companies. But I don't have enough background in it yet to describe the technology adequately. So we're not going to do that. But I will show you one of the videos from their website that talks about being able to release energy by changing the relationship between electrons and the nucleus in hydrogen atoms. And it releases energy similar to a nuclear scale, but not with the radiation that is recognized in a nuclear type of arrangement. Let's take a look at this video. That is this technology in use in one of their demonstration videos. So I would encourage you to go back and take a look at Brilliant Light and do your own research. I would also suggest that you take a look at the website that Ms. Fitz provides this and other information through, and it is called Solari, SOLARI.com. And I have a funny feeling that when Trump was talking about reducing Americans' energy costs, something perhaps like this, or maybe another company, might have a play in that as we go forward. Do I know that? No. But I also have enough background to recognize when Trump says things, they often turn out to be very true, but often in ways that we don't expect. So we appreciate you being with us this evening. We will be back Sunday with lots more, and we'll keep bringing to you every possible piece of truth that we can as we go forward here in Georgia. So thank you again for being with us, and we'll see you next time.